Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business, Dr. Luther, returns with some crazy stories about the time he spent working in South Africa. He had things thrown at him in the ring, was almost shot by militia members, and had to explain the difference between barbed wire and razor wire to save his own life. He's also talking about his tryouts for ECW, WCW, and WWE, and why none of them resulted in long-term contracts. And then what happened when he finally did get offered a contract from AEW earlier this year, which of course leads to tonight's big main event of Jericho and Hager versus the Chaos Project, Luther and Serpentico, Wednesday night on AEW Dynamite for the Jericho 30 celebration. Make sure you check it out and check out the Luther video that was posted on Dark and posted on my Instagram, kind of explaining more about this guy and what he's done throughout the years and how big this match is for both of us. So Luther's coming up, part two, and so is a new episode of the Winnipeggers tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube channel. Dave Spivak and Rybo are doing Made in Winnipeg with me as an Iron Maiden. We're telling the story in all its drunken glory about the time we went to see Iron Maiden at the Los Angeles Forum in 2008 with Gabe and Eli Roth. Included a stop in Las Vegas, a run-in with Courtney Love, and a backstage hang with members of Anthrax, Slayer, and Metallica. So check out the new episode of the Winnipeggers tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube channel. All right, let's get to Dr. Luther Part 2 right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so after the amazing part one, which at this time, neither one of us are quite remembering exactly what we talked about, but it's the return of Dr. Russa. But even though you're hearing this a few weeks later, or months, or whatever, this is the next night, and you had another match night. It's the first time you've worked twice in a row here in AEW.
Tired. Beat up.
Yeah?
It was awesome.
How was it, like, because you had, this is your third match, so you had, but you had two successively here in AEW.
And one was, like, I guess, hardcore match. And I got beat up pretty good. It was awesome. I love it. And then today's was, I just did my thing.
It was an enhancement match.
Enhancement.
Which is interesting, because we were talking about how, for Dark, they're doing a lot of enhancement matches, but a lot of the guys don't understand what the concept of an enhancement match is. I had an enhancement match tonight, too, with Pineapple Pete. And I was explaining to some of the guys, because a lot of guys got hurt, and they're giving too much to the guys. And this is not being a jerk. It's just that's how wrestling works. There's levels, hierarchy. And when you're a contracted performer against a non-contracted performer, you basically...
You need to put yourself on what you can do over. Because at that point... That's when you're selling yourself, your wares to the people.
Yeah, and a lot of, I think a lot of guys came from the mindset of like, well, we have to have a good match every night. And if you're working on the indies and you're going to, you know, Tacoma on a Saturday and Seattle on a Sunday and Everett on a Monday, you want to have, who's doing Saturday, Sunday, Monday?
No, I was like thinking that would have been rad.
But Friday's not a good night for wrestling. whatever.
It's not a gauntlet down.
But you want to try and have the best match possible. When you get these enhancement matches, it's the rare time when you can, like you said, show off all your stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the guys now didn't understand that and think they're supposed to have these 50-50 matches. You did not have that tonight.
I did not. He punched me a couple times.
Right. But that's, once. But that's the error that we came up with was the...
And I didn't even show all my stuff because there's going to be more, like...
Did you ever do any enhancement matches as an enhancement talent? Like in Stampede or...
Yeah, when I started. Because, you know, when you start, that's kind of your role to just get in there. I remember, like, it wasn't Stampede. It was, like, CNWA wrestling. When I got in there, that's what I was. And I remember wrestling Ron Ritchie, who was, like, the big... He was the champion there.
Yeah.
And I did, like, you know, 6 minutes of enhancement for him. And he really he liked me because I listened. And then he asked to wrestle me again. And we went longer, and he gave me more. And then he asked to wrestle again, and... I think I wrestled him like 4 or 5 times. I remember one time he was still the champ, and we went to Edmonton, and we got like 20 or 30 minutes, and he gave me like a ton of it.
Like on a house show?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But he gave me like most, probably 70, because he liked to sell. He was a good, that was his whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Big I remember the Ron Ritchie sell, where he'd be like, oh, begging with the hands. That's
actually where I learned to do babyface selling, because it was great.
He was a great babyface seller, yeah.
But he gave me a tons of, like, and I was just kind of earning my stripes with him, you know what I mean? Because I listened, didn't hurt him. That's the big thing.
And you can work.
Yeah. Rule number one, don't hurt the signed talent.
Right. We had three guys go down tonight from that happening.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Ron Ritchie when we first started, he was like super nice, but like at this point, he was just kind of a weekend warrior. But he was one of those guys that was like, what's the chick from Saturday Night Live that's always sad? Oh, Debbie Downer. Ronnie Downer.
I drove back from Edmonton one time, and he drank like a case of beer on the 3-hour ride and was like that the whole time. But
he told us, like, you know, you guys, you look so great, you work so hard, but the business is done. If you would have come out 10 years early, you guys would make huge money, be huge stars, but now you basically don't have a chance. And this was like 1990, and I'm just like, wah, 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 wah.
My other favorite Ron Ritchie thing is his opponent one time was in the ring waiting for him. And his song played all the way through.
I was there.
And then it played again. What did it play, like 5 times or 4 times? And they're like, where's Ron? Everyone's running. He was in the bathroom taking a dump. and his music just kept playing. I think 4 or 5 times through. And how long is the song? Like 3-4 minutes?
How long is the dump here? Like, and do you not know that you're probably on at some point?
Like, dude.
The last match Gene Kiniski ever had, the great Gene Kiniski, was as me and Lance Runstorm's partner, and his music was playing, and he was sitting there, like, you know, the old timers, they would sit there with no pants on, like,
with their boots.
I remember Bob Brown would pay us with his one hand on his
God,
in the other hand,
so gross, and he'd rub it around and then try to like pay you with the same
one hand with his wheel ski and one hand with the money, and you wanted the money, but you didn't want the Frank's and beans juice. But he was sitting there with no pants on, and his music, and he didn't know what music was playing. It was our music. I think it was like Firehouse, Overnight Sensation.
Something that fit him really good.
That was our music, though. And he's like, I'm like, Gene, this is our music. Oh, this is our music? Okay. It's the classic old school old timer. He finishes his cigarette, takes the last drink of whatever he's drinking, crushes out the cigarette, stands up, then pulls up his pants, then goes, all right, boys, let's go. And we go to the ring. I'm like, that's your warm-up? Pulling up your pants and smoking a cigarette?
Well, that was my warm-up tonight, other than the cigarette part.
You just pulled up your pants?
Yeah, pulled up my pants, kind of.
Pulled them down.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's how I warm up.
It's the Duff McKagan joke of the week. He goes, I told my wife, if you want to have sex, pull my wiener once. If you don't want to have sex, pull my wiener 100 times. So we left off part one, the exciting episode part one, which was great. And we were talking about, like, basically 33 years career and also 30 years of friendship that we have. We could probably do 10 podcasts. But we wanted to focus more. We talked about Japan last time and kind of more the Calgary and that sort of thing.
Kind of always talked about kind of that, bring up that quite a bit.
Yeah, but we wanted to talk about your South Africa, because you really wanted to bring this up. Because South Africa, I've never been there. So this is something that you know a lot about. And so let's kind of talk about the whole South Africa scene and tell us kind of what you did there.
Well, it was really crazy there. So I got booked because Gamma Singh was going there, and he was crazy popular. He was like Hulk Hogan there.
Gamma was a guy that worked in Calgary for years.
He's with Impact.
As a top heel. He's with Impact. Yeah, Don Bonham at Impact.
Yeah. It's super nice guy.
But why was he so popular in South America?
Because he's just gone there for a lot of Indians there.
Gotcha.
And he's been there a bunch, and over like a rover.
Right.
Like, it was crazy, which is kind of weird because in Calgary he was always like the most hated villain.
Karachi Vice,
ever. And then there he's like uber babyface.
So was he putting together a tour and brought some Calgary guys?
So they're
guys?
Putting together that got brought some Calgary guys, and I'll tell this story. We'll go back to it, but this little story here, I'll skip.
We're gonna go all over the place again.
It's gonna be all over. Right. So, anyways, I go there, do the tour, but coming home from that tour, I get stopped in England. We have to go through England or whatever. And they wouldn't let me get on the plane. So I flew all the way to South Africa to do the tour, halfway back, and then they wouldn't stop because they're on my tickets to St. Clair, but my on my ID that's not say St. Clair. And she's like, "Well, that's a different name." I was like, "What?" She's like, "This is a different name." And so I look, and I was like, "Oh, that's like my wrestling name or my stage name." And they wouldn't believe me. And so then I had to try to tell them, like, no, this is – but I flew all the way there with it saying St. Clair the whole time, and no one even said anything.
And this is like pre-9/11.
Oh, yeah, way before
where
that.
You might be able to get away with that. And there's also like nowadays, sometimes it happens if I check into a hotel, it's like, well, it says Chris Irwin on your ID, but Chris Jericho – I can always go Google something and go, this is Chris Jericho, same guy. You couldn't do that then.
Nope, couldn't do that, and I just had to like kind of sweet talk.
How'd you get through it?
I just tried to tell him like this is a stage name, and I was with a couple other guys, and another time going to South Africa from Japan, I went to do a tour of Japan, and I came back. Something was with my visa at the time was run out, and the guy stopped me and wouldn't let me in, and I basically bullied him. Like, I just came the real, you know, when I get real quiet for a minute and my eyes get all dilated. Yeah. And then I started like kind of yelling at him, and he's like, "Ooh!" And he stamped my thing and let me through. That would never fly now.
No,
I would have been put in jail.
That happened to me one time when we were on a Fozzy tour or somewhere. I had the light up jacket, and this was a bad decision. Which I used to do would be drink all night on the bus ride back to the airport, and then just go straight to the airport. And you'd have to wait 3-4 hours and still keep drinking. And then by the time you go through customs, you're even more loaded. And I had the light-up jacket with me, and it wouldn't – he's like, "Well, what is this?" And I go to the little German room, and it's like, it's a light-up jacket, dude. And I have no time for this because I know what it is, but some people see this, and they think, oh, there's wires and the batteries, and it's metal, some kind of bomb. And it's like, it's not. It's a light-up jacket. He goes, "Well, turn it on." I go to turn it on, and the batteries were dead. It wasn't working. I got so pissed. I was like, "Give me the jacket. I'm getting it. This is stupid. Give me some battery. Give me it." And I'm like, what am I doing? But I can't stop. Thankfully, there was an English guy in there who was a fan who got me out, but I'm like, nice. God, you can't be yelling at
But you get on a roll and you can't stop,
right?
Yeah, that's what happened to me. But the guy let me in, and I was like, well, I just totally bullied my way in.
So you go to South Africa with Gamma.
Go to South Africa with Gamma. It was, we would perform in like tennis stadiums, packed, like 30,000 people. Mm. Like, it was crazy. Or like huge arenas, it's like sold out, which was probably the biggest crowd.
How long was the tour?
I did 5 tours there, and that one was, I want to say it was like a month maybe.
So you would go over there for months, so you would do these shows.
Paul came on the first one with me. Paul was on that person. Yeah.
Would this be bigger than like a Tokyo Dome crowd? Or not Tokyo Dome, whatever you go. What did you used to do? Oh, Yokohama Stadium?
No. Oh, I would say.
Wow.
A little bit less than that maybe. Yeah, gotcha. But it was like a lot. But the difference is like Japanese crowds really respect the wrestling, and they love it. And over there, I don't know, I wouldn't say they respected it because they would try to kill us or stab us or hit us with things. So coming back from, there was this overhang to get to our dress rooms, and people would like hit you with sticks or throw rocks or throw batteries or throw,
really?
Yeah. And so I came up, I just grabbed a chair and would hold it over my head, and then you could hear it like hitting, and then all of a sudden they know now everyone's doing that.
Like too. Hail on the roof of your car or something.
But it was scary as hell, and I knew something was wrong. Like, so we get there, and there's like, is it militia? Is that the army guys? Is that the right word? Militia. So there's like militia guys there, or army guys or something, and they all have like, there's German shepherds everywhere, and they got like big machine.
These guys
guns.
Are on your side.
Yeah, they're like the security.
Wow.
And I was like, I mean, I've been in a lot of arenas, a lot of different venues. I've never seen that.
Armed security, yeah.
And I'm like, so when I see that, I mean, the first thing that goes in my head is like, this is not good. Or the, you know what I mean? Like, right. So, and then the fans are crazy. My first tour there, the wrestling was rounds, like British style, like five rounds of 3 minutes or something. Which, have you done that when you were in England?
It was Hamburg. They had rounds, but they stopped it right before the first show because WWE was there at that point. So I didn't wrestle the rounds.
It's hard because as a heel, you have to try to build up heat, and all of a sudden, boom, end, and then you got to start over.
It's like a 30-second break in between.
Yeah, and then you got to try to get everything back. Mm-hmm. Like everything's killed at that time, you know. And so,
were you Dr. Luther at that point?
I went as the Atomic Punk, and but they called me something on the posters too. I think they wrote Automatic Punk or something.
Kind of kills the whole
thing. And then Paul was Death Wolf Fenris when they wrote Deadly Wolf or something.
Just lazy. Just put Deadly Wolf. Stupid. It's fine.
So, yeah, we did that tours, and it was pretty crazy. Like, another tour, I remember being there. One of the guys got stabbed by a fan for, like, 26 stitches or something crazy.
Right. So they're pretty crazy there.
Super crazy. There was – it was two different promoters would run, but they'd share the talent. So it was kind of divided. It was sort of like two tours, but they each had the same shows. And one of the guys – was an East Indian guy that owned all these hotels and things like that. So that's where he made his money, and that's where we stayed. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was this guy from Yugoslavia that was there that was like a pimp or something like
a pimpster,
that.
A pimpster?
Because we stayed at a brothel. That's where he put us up in Johannesburg. So Johannesburg was like the murder capital of South Africa. At one point I read when we were there, it averaged like 50 murders a day or something like that.
Didn't you say that people were walking on the streets with like AIDS-infested needles and would just stab people?
Yeah, it was crazy. And then I know that we all had bodyguards when we were there. And we were told, like, when we were in this Hillsborough place, Paul knows, has a way better memory than me, but... We were told not to go out on our own. Like, if you go anywhere,
we've had that before, though, in certain areas. Like, I remember, like, in, like India was like that, and, like, Colombia was like that.
It's scary, right? Yeah.
Don't leave this compound that we're on.
And then at nighttime, like, all you can hear is, like, screaming and guns and sirens. And it was like a war, almost.
Were you guys getting good payoffs?
I mean, it was okay, yeah. I mean, I don't think it was... Japan money, but right. I can't remember how much I made, to tell you the truth, but it was good enough to go there. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you're still sort of struggling, you go anywhere that offers you a tour.
Plus, there's adventure.
You're going
South Africa.
New.
I mean, shit.
And so we go to this hotel, and as soon as you walk in, you got to go through like a jail cell gates or whatever. They buzz you through, and then you go through another one. And then there's this big sand pit that says disarm your firearm. So you got to shoot your bullet in there or something like that.
Oh, like to get rid of the bullets?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is – like we never see stuff like that.
This isn't the older side anymore.
That was crazy. And then you get through another gate. Like it's like getting into Fort Knox. And then we want to eat. And then they're like, oh, there's a family restaurant. So to get to this family restaurant, you got to walk through this little kind of like a casino thing with all these slot machines and stuff. And then it goes into another room, which is like a nightclub, like a full-on nightclub. And I didn't really pay attention because, like, I was just – you know when you get super hungry, it's like that's all you can think about.
Right.
So I'm just like want to find it. So then I walk through this nightclub, and I look in the back, and I can see in these big letters it says family restaurant. So I was like, this is weird thing, to get a family restaurant. So I walk in there and I'm looking at the menu. So you tell me before I get it, what would you think? What does family restaurant mean?
That would be kind of like a Denny's, eggs, bacon, hamburgers, you know, maybe spaghetti, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like on a Saturday morning, you take
like
the grill.
Pancakes,
You go, So we go in there and I'm looking and the waitress comes up and then I see what I want. And so I go to what I do all the time. I point at it and I go to tell her. I look up, totally topless. And I'm like, this says family restaurant outside in big letters. And I look, And I looked back down, and I remember looking around the table, and everybody's just looking at. I was like, so I was just like, oh, I'll get the number 17.
It's the Puerno family restaurant.
So, and then when after we eat, I'm still like thinking this is really weird. And then we go back out to the nightclub, and then like all these, you know, everyone's on you, and I was like, oh, this is like a Filipino den or something. Right. And then I realized we're in a brothel. He put us up in a brothel, or he owned it, or I don't even know. But I just stayed in my room. And then they made us share, like, it was this little tiny room, and it was me, Paul, and PN News had to share a room. God.
Which is like 800 pounds of man.
Gross. But we all shared this. Yeah, it was crazy, and it was loud all the time because stuff going on. But that was that place. And then, we went to other places.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter, because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes, and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store when we realize we're all out of cat litter. It's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. And before we continue, I just want to give a tribute and a shout out to the legendary Eddie Van Halen, who passed away just yesterday. Today, actually, as I'm recording this, just found out about it about an hour ago. And one of the greatest of all time. And I posted this on Instagram. When you're a step up from being the greatest guitar player of all time, your name is Eddie Van Halen. Thank you for the riffs, Eddie, the solos, the good times, the energy, the attitude, the amazing live shows. And that smile. Oh, that I'm bringing whiskey to the party tonight, and I don't need a glass because it already comes in a bottle type smile. God bless you, Edward Van Halen. Your work with Van Halen and your music has done more to make the world a happier place than you'll ever know. And one more thing, after taking Neil Peart, Kobe Bryant, and now EVH from us, 2020, will you kindly just fuck off already? All right. Thanks for all your work, Eddie. And thanks to Luther for returning here on Talk is Jericho. Let's get back to the action. How did you start to like become kind of one of the bookers there, or whatever it was that you were doing?
I never booked.
Well, I mean, you were one of the kind of the top guy.
Yeah, eventually, because I did a couple tours and then I stayed there for a while too, for like a year or so. But I remember
for reasons we shan't discuss.
But yeah, girl stuff.
Right? Well, my own.
But
and let me just interject here is that we went to I had gotten you into WAR, Dr. Mm-hmm. Luther, and you were doing great, and then you made the smart decision to move from Canada to South Africa, which doubled their flight costs and kind of halved your tours.
Yeah, kind of in half, but hey, we do strange things, don't we?
I did it for love.
Sometimes the nanny talks. Then, then,
so you were there for a year.
So one of the, also one of the weirdest things, some guy wanted to, so I'll tell you about two different companies that worked there. So this guy kept getting a hold of me. Hey, I want to start running, shows, and I'm a promoter, and like he's telling all this stuff, and I'm like, you know, when dudes are not promoters, you can tell them all the way. But he's wanting to throw this big money at me. So I was like, sure, I want this. And so I gave him this huge, hefty price because I thought that would scare him away. But he totally said, okay. So he paid me all up front. I was like, well, this is crazy. Then he's wanting to take, like, pictures of me working out on the beach and training for it and all this. And I was like, this is weird. But he's like, oh, it's for magazines. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I do it. And then comes time for the show, and it's there's one guy down in South Africa named Tornado. He was the only guy that could wrestle.
Tornado, right?
Yeah. The rest, every other dude there was terrible. Like, terrible.
Like, hardly trained.
Oh, my God. Shit, yeah. So put it this way. We're on the bus going to a show one time, and this guy's talking. He's like, yeah, how long have you been working? And I think at the time I'd been working like 13, 14 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you know, 13 years. And so the guy's like, oh, 7 years or whatever. And he's like, oh, I've been working like 24 years. And I look at him and I'm like, wow, dude, you look young. Like 24 years. It's like, and so I was like, how old are you? And he's like, oh, I'm 26. And I was like, you've been working 24 years?
Dude, he was in the baby wrestling league. Well,
he goes, yeah, my dad took me to wrestling when I was 20. I was like, you know, it doesn't work that way. He's like, yeah, that's what I was like. So I played in the NHL.
right. I was an Iron Maiden.
Yeah. I sang, played guitar, and bass.
It's one of those things, like, I remember, like Bob Puppets or something, God bless him, where he'd be like, I've been working for 10 years. And imagine he had 16.
Yeah, exactly. 1 or 2 a year. Yeah. And so he was, but he was like totally straight faced, totally believed all. And so I was like, so I finally was like, And they kept talking to these guys. And I was sitting there, and I couldn't take it because I was like, oh, my God. So I was like, when did you physically start training? He's like, oh, like a year ago. I was like, oh, so you've been working a year.
Yeah. That's how it works.
You know, as right. like not more than that.
Right.
But that's their logic. Like every guy there, that was their logic, except for Tornado, who was actual – seemed like he was smart and he was pretty good actually. So he's like this promoter guy. Books me and Tornado for this. It was at a fair, and the fair was pretty big, and I was like, oh, that's cool. So we get there, and there's a ring, which I don't know how he got a ring, but he had the ring, and then I had my own dressing room, and I did not have a rider. I should have thought of that back then.
Right. Yeah, you're smart, man. Rider, yeah.
You're smart. So I get in there, and so I was like, well, where's the other boys? And they're like, oh, Tornado's in his dressing. I was like, no, like the rest of the boys. He's like, oh, no, just you two. I was like, you booked a whole show with just two guys? They're like, us two? And he's like, oh, yeah, what was I supposed to do? I was like, I thought you said you were a promoter. Like, this isn't a show.
Right.
This is like one exhibition or whatever. So then he comes back a little bit later. He's like, oh, I got a couple more matches. And I was like, where did you get? He's like, oh, yeah, some guys that were out. So I was like, so you're just pulling people out of the audience to wrestle,
right?
So that was the show. He's just getting people to wrestle. And then it's nighttime, like, because we start later. We had to do something else, which I'll jump to after this part, little promo we did for this show at the fair that almost got me killed. But so it was nighttime, and it's time for our match. So I go out, and it's pitch black. And you know when you can – so – at nighttime when you can sort of see things, like, but you can't see things.
Yeah.
So I can see the ring, and I can see there's a lot of people there. And I was like, but I was looking around. I was like, so you're turning the lights on when we start? And he's like, the what? And I was like, where are the lights? And he's like, oh, I didn't get lights. So I was like, are you expecting us to wrestle in the pitch black in front of these people? He's like, well, I didn't think of that. I was like,
They could have done like we did in Mexico one time when the same happened. They just turned on some car headlights.
That's what this guy did. So he pulled cars around, but the problem is
the lights are too low.
Straight in your eyes, and you can't see the ropes or anything. So I had him turn the one side, or actually like two sides or whatever, of no car. So the lights are just coming one way. And I tried just to work off the one side of the ring the whole time that I could kind of see. But I was like, oh, it was terrible. So he set up this thing, though, earlier in the day in the fair. They had a radio station. And over there, I think there's only like one or two stations. It was, you know, back then. And so they had this like camper van thing. That's where the radio was in there, or the DJ or whatever. So me and Tornado were supposed to go do interviews. So I told Tornado to go first and talk, and then I was going to like barge in there because I was the big heel, and then demand that this is my time. You know, the whole shtick. But they totally believe everything's real there. Tornado is a cop in his real day job or whatever. So he's in there and he's talking, and then I slam the door open, and then I go in there and I start screaming at him about this is my time, and I start screaming at the DJ that, like, how dare you book times, and now it's him. So I had some buddies listening to this as it was all happening, and they said it went dead air, and it's never gone dead air. Like, it just stopped. So this DJ guy freaked out, and then – because I start pushing Tornado and I'm yelling because we're doing the whole shtick. And he hits like abort on the feed and then runs out. And I'm like, holy shit, this is crazy. So then I turn to leave. And as I walk out, I hear, get down on the ground. I look up and there's like 10 dudes with machine guns pointed at me. What? And I'm like, well, yeah, like army guys or the militia guys.
Yeah.
And because they thought I was hijacking the radio station. So they called like these dudes in. And so like I go down on my knees and I'm like, I'm scared shitless because all I can think of is one of these idiots is going to shoot me by accident. Right. And I'm like down, my hands are up, and I've never been in trouble before or whatever. And then I'm down the ground. They're like, get down. I'm like down. And I'm like, I didn't do anything. And then the DJ guy's like, yeah, that's him. I can hear him yell, that's him. And then Tornado comes out and he's like trying to tell him, like, no, I'm a cop and this is
a show.
And so they take the sergeant. The sergeant guy goes to talk with Tornado and the promoter, but then keeps everybody guns pointed at me, like, I'm not allowed to move. And then they go talking, and then they come out, and then he just waves everyone off, and they go. And I'm like, that was one of the scariest moments ever.
Yeah.
But what if they just believed it.
Goes off?
That's what I said. Like one of these idiots just pulls a hair trigger or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And so I should have known to walk away from that because I was earlier in the day. And then at nighttime we had no lights and nothing.
Yeah.
So I was like, that was like super crazy.
But so when you were living there for the year,
mm-hmm.
did they start having matches? Because you mentioned that.
Yeah,
you,
we
you
do did, tours.
Like something they, like you were a pioneer in South Africa.
So I had the first barbed wire match in South Africa, me and Tornado. Mm-hmm. I think we had like 18,000 people in this big arena.
How are you drawing 18,000 people though? Are you on TV or?
They didn't have TV, but they promoted, I think, probably on TV. And there's the thing is, this is the 90s still. They had like one channel there.
Good point.
Two channels.
It was only 25 years ago, it might as well have been 100 compared to what we do with now.
There was nothing to do. It's like when we used to wrestle and go to towns, we still draw pretty good. It's like because there's nothing to do.
Where's the wrestling at?
Yeah, where's the wrestling? Are you the big show? And then
when did you get asked if you're the big show?
Remember I did some reservation. I've been asked two times, a couple times, if I was where's the big show? Another one kept asking me if I was the Rock. I kind of look like The Rock.
Oh, yeah. You got the dashing good looks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little better, but, you know, I'm not going to. That's splitting hairs.
That's nitpicking, isn't it?
That's nitpicking. But so it was crazy. So we're having – that one was a really crazy show, too, because I don't usually walk out to, like, look at the ring. Like, even in our shows now, like, sometimes I'll go out and walk around the ring.
Just to see what is –
just see what's up. But I've only gone in there to, you know, practice sort of one time. I practiced one move with the QT one time to see how my arm was doing. Because I won't do a move if I'm not good at it.
So there was a
move. Which is a very veteran thing that you learn over time. If you're not good at it, don't do it.
No, I won't do it.
Right.
And so there was a move I used to do until I tore my tricep, so I wasn't sure how I would be at it. So I went to practice it with one of the enhancement guys, and I could do it, but it didn't look how I'd want it to look, so I didn't do it. Mm. I came up with something else. Never do stuff you're not used to.
Right.
You know?
Never do something for the first time on live TV.
No. I won't do a move for me, and I won't even do a move for you, even if it's a move right. you do. If I'm not going to be good at it, I'm gonna tell you, because I'm going to make it look like crap, and it's going to look bad for you and me. Yeah. Right. And to me, I never get mad at a guy, even your status. If you shouldn't be mad at me, and I don't get mad because being honest.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's like
there's certain things totally you can't being do. Honest. There's nothing wrong with that.
And there's stuff you, like we talked, like you're not going to be able to do everything out there.
I can't do a leg drop. I have the worst leg drop in the world.
So you don't do it?
Never.
Yeah.
Haven't done one ever.
See?
There you go. So you
if I ever work you, I'm just going to leg drop me. Leg drop me.
Tackle drop down, leg drop. No!
Leg drop it.
So you said you never went to the ring.
So, but for some reason I'm in the dressing room and I'm like, you should walk down the ring. And I don't know, you ever get sometimes that sixth sense, I guess?
Premonition, yeah.
So I walk down there, and it's not barbed wire on the ropes. It's razor wire. Have you ever seen razor wire?
Oh, yeah.
They look like, and I was, so I'm looking,
it's
I was
razors.
Like, it's razors on barbed wire.
Legit razors.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so I was like, no. And they're like, what do you mean? And this is barbed wire. I was like, this is not barbed wire. This is razor wire. And he's like, no. He wants to argue with me about it. And I was like, so I draw my picture, because there's no, you know, you don't phone to bring up stuff
like 2x11.
So I was like, do you guys have this in your country? And they're like, oh yeah. I was like, that's barbed wire, this is razor wire. I was like the barbed wire will hurts,
right?
Razor wire kills. Yeah. I was like, that's a huge difference.
And you drew a picture on a napkin with like 2 inches by 8.
Yeah. It's exactly what I did.
So, but because you had barbed wire matches, or as Sabu called them, bob wire matches.
Yeah, I've had many barbed wire matches.
Now, these are legit barbed wire in FMW, right?
Yeah, like right. sticking you.
Because when we had one with me and Beef Wellington in Calgary, which was, hey, by the way, the first barbed wire match in Canada.
That's
Mr.
True.
South Africa.
Well, wire match.
Wire match. Well, hold on. We cut the barbs off you one did. Side, and of course, I ended up in the wrong side. Where there was barbs.
And got it.
And that's hard to get out of that shit, too.
Yeah, you get stuck in it.
And you can't move to pull it out.
I've been stuck many times hanging. One time in Japan, I got hit. I got thrown into it. And I hit it. And I was literally wrapped up hanging with just my feet on the ring apron. And I was hanging over.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, over the floor. And I couldn't get up.
If you move, it hurts. If you stay, it hurts.
But I couldn't even get the momentum to try to get up. So I had to get the young girls, I don't remember who did it, was trying to push me from the floor. And I think Goto maybe grabbed me to pull me back, because I was just, they could have like left me hanging there the whole time because I couldn't move. Like, I was
talking about
leaving
me hanging.
It's true. Dun-dun-dun. I was like just sitting there. And then also, like before we said, like the long hair would get caught in it all the time.
Triple H hit me with a barbed wire bat once on top of a Hell in a Cell. That legit, obviously they gimmicked it a little bit, but it got stuck in my hair and ripped my hair up.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
It just wraps in there.
Yeah.
So you get, that's why I started braiding my hair, because at first I didn't braid my hair. I just put it like in a ponytail, but it would still be like all over the place.
Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
So when you're talking about you drew the pictures of the barbed wire, did they actually come back and get barbed wire?
They changed it and they put barbed wire up.
Gotcha.
So we're in this show. I got awesome heat when I was there. Like, I was really hated, which weird. I don't know how people could hate me. I just got such a so sparkling lovable personality. And so...
bubbly.
Yeah. My mom says I'm awesome. So I'm getting tons of heat over there, and I'm probably, you know, it's an age, so I'm probably not too PC about everything, but everybody's hating me. And they start crushing up cans and like serrating the edges.
Oh my gosh.
And then all of a sudden, and I did this in Vancouver like 4 years ago where I got heat and they were just littering the ring with stuff. And I did it with Natch on a show where they're just littering, yeah, like, for some reason, people want to throw stuff at me. Yeah, I don't know why. But it should be money. That'd be okay. But so they started throwing these cans, and I started getting hit. And the ref got hit a couple times and got cut bad. And they're just lit. And, like, I can't go anywhere. So these guys are throwing tables in the ring. And I'm, like, we're hiding underneath tables until everyone's done throwing stuff so I could leave. It was that was really crazy. And that was at the beginning of the night when I just went in to cut a promo before they even put everything up. So got really good heat. It was a great match. Big pop when he won. He
threw you in the barbed wire?
Yeah, and then he ended up pinning me. Like, I worked, but, like, I hate when I watch, like, deathmatch guys now that hit everything, like, right off the bat. That never makes sense to me. I always milked it. You know what I mean? Like, it should mean something, like, when you finally get it.
Yeah, totally.
These guys will just hit stuff right away. I'm like, whatever.
So... but, obviously, once again, we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but you mentioned being such a pioneer with the death matches and so.
Well, I don't know if I was a pioneer, but like I was there kind of the when they were starting.
So my point is this. So with all the stuff that you had done, mentioned being a top star in Japan at a very young age, South Africa, same thing.
I sent
thing.
You the picture today, too.
You did, of choking out Ueda. And you're literally choking him out if you guys listen to part one. But let's talk about, we mentioned on the last episode about how you signed with AEW, and we talked earlier about having two matches in a row. But this has been a long time coming of signing. Like, we were all, like, kissing babies and slapping hands and slapping babies and kissing hands when you signed your contract. Because it was like a real, like, Rudy, like, dream come true, you know? Like, the fucking guy.
I was actually speechless. I remember when they offered me the contract, I thought they were ribbing me.
Tell that story quickly. That's great.
So Daniels and Cody took me in a room, and
Chris Daniels said, Cody wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
And this is after you'd been there for 2-3 months. And we forgot to mention,
I thought I was getting fired.
Well, because you had signed 2 5-show deals or whatever it was. So they were signing you for 5, and then they'd give you another 5. And,
yeah.
But there's nothing guaranteed.
And then sometimes I would just do promos.
Right.
You know, and...
So Daniels comes to get you.
So, well, the thing is... I thought it was over something else. Like,
you thought you were getting fired.
I thought I was going to get let go or whatever. So, because I mean, I've had that.
It's happened every time.
I've had that, hey, can you come see us or whatever? And I'm like, so I go in there and I'm like, oh my God, this is not going to be good. And I'm like, I get like a little anxiety once in a while. So, and then my brain starts going crazy and I'm like, oh, this is not good. So I go in there and, they offered me a full contract or whatever. And
3-year deal or 2-year deal. Or
yeah. And then, but at first, and so they're offered, and I was just like sort of sitting there, didn't know what to do or what to say. And then, but they're looking at me and they're kind of smiling. And so I thought, they're ribbing me. So I said straight up, I was like, are you ribbing me? And Cody, I don't know if, that's why I asked one time. I was like, I don't know if Cody, like, we rib a lot. Like,
right.
And so I was like, he's like, no. And I was like, maybe he doesn't rib because I don't know. If
he would never rib about something like that. Yeah. That would be cruel.
But that's something would have happened to us back in the day.
Yeah.
Those guys would have done that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where my
head
goes right away. And so then I was like speechless. And
but the reason why
I probably didn't act like I would have in my head where I'd be like, yeah. And like, but in real life, I was
cool.
Like, yeah, I was trying to be all cool, but I was also like, oh my God.
And that's when, like, when they were talking about, like, what do you think Luther wants, like, for his deal? I'm like, a bag of used hockey pucks and a Eugene Levy t-shirt? Like, what do you got? You don't care. But the point is, you finally got this major contract, and it was so amazing. But the reason why it was so amazing, not because you deserve it. You deserve it, and you've had so many years, but you got burned so many times.
Yep.
You know, and that's what we talked about in episode one. The fact that you signed the contract on March 11th when the world shut down March 12th at midnight was the first time, like, that Lenny, Lucky Lenny,
something was good.
Russia's Rennie was Rucky.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
So tell us about the burn notices, because I remember maybe your first one, but you tell me what your first one was.
So which one were you thinking? You tell me. And I'll...
Mexico?
Okay, the Mexico thing was the peso fell. Because that was about 95. Yeah, the peso fell.
But tell that whole story, though.
Oh, we did on the last one.
Well, that was three years ago.
Okay.
No, we did not in part one.
Yeah, we talked about the Mexico deal with the peso fell, and that's when I went.
Oh, he thought you were a mechanic. That's right.
I mean, I was a mechanic. Mike and the mechanics. Yeah,
yeah, they're going to.
But that was a band, wasn't it, Mike and the Mechanics?
The Living Years. Yeah, that's right. So Paco was going to bring you in. Yes, we talked about that.
And then, and that was, I still would have went if I didn't get the other opportunity to go somewhere else that paid more.
Which was?
That's when I went to South Africa.
Gotcha. So you come back from South Africa and.
And then FMW was pissed off that I went to South Africa.
Why? You'd already been working for WAR at that point.
Not the first trip.
Oh.
Yeah, the first trip I was still technically with them, because that's when they were like, stop booking me. And that's when you're like, hey, you want to come here?
You mean, and then, they many, many pissed off.
Yeah, many pissed off. And but then Titans came over.
Yeah, I like, brought Titan in.
There's some
DeComo and
yeah,
you.
Some FMW guys.
Do you remember the call that we...
Oh, with Adams?
Brian Adams.
Oh, my God, dude.
Tell that story.
Okay.
So the late great Brian Adams was amazing at doing imitations.
Super good.
And he could do Tiger Chung Lee, and he could do Mr. Sato.
Sato is what I was trying to think of, yeah. So,
and Sato was with us in WA.
Sato was like the agent, right? Like, yeah.
He's the guy that had the laugh riot attack because somebody broke their arm.
Oh, he was really nice to me, though.
What is Brian like? This is a young boy. He do a dive out of the ring. He break his arm with two places.
Well, you like that stuff. So I get a call, and it's Sato, or what I think. And he's like, hey, we're really interested in having you come over here, and we want to pay you like some big money.
For his new company.
And I was like, okay, like, it sounds good. And I've dealt with him before, and he was cool with me. But then he's like, we want you to stay as, like, be Dr. Luther, but a little bit different. And I was like, oh, like, what's that? And he's like, we want you to wear a dress. And I was like, what? And he's like, we want you to wear a dress. And so I was thinking about this. And I was like, wear a dress? And so then I was like, and Marilyn Manson was big then, and he kind of dressed like, wore dresses and stuff. So I was like,
Cobain.
Yeah. So I was like a Marilyn Manson, kind of like a more gothy looking, like just kind of still like a guy, but kind of strange or whatever. And they're like, he's like, and I'm not going to imitate it because I can't do it. But he's like, like a girl.
Like a dress with flowers.
Yeah. And I was like, huh, as Dr. Luther? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, huh. But the money sounded really good. But then I was like, can I think about it? And they're like, he's like, well, we need to really,
one time only offer. You must tell me now.
Yeah. And I was like, but I stuck to my guns. I was like, I don't know. I got to think about it. I was like, and then so I said again, I was like, if I could do like a Marilyn Manson thing, maybe. And they're like, he's like, no, like it just a dress. But as Dr. Lou, I was like, oh, and I was like, I'll think about it and get back to you. And then I didn't get back to him. But then you called me like a day or two later and you're like, hey, what's up? Because we used to talk all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But then like neither of us were married. And like, you know.
And this is pre-texting emails.
Yeah,
if you want to talk
texting,
to somebody, you got to talk. Yeah.
And we talked a lot. And so you're like, hey, so what's up? And it's like, oh, nothing. And then I never said anything. That's typical me, right? Like.
No, but here's what I remember. Because the reason why I know this is because I was with Brian Adams.
Yeah.
Because he had gotten bent.
But you called and you're trying to get it out of me.
Hey, how's your burger? Why don't you take a bite of your burger?
Yeah. You're like, what's up? I was like, nothing. And you're like,
are you sure? Like, you get any calls at all?
That's what you said. You're like, have you been talking to people? I was like, what? And you're like, are you in any wrestling? I was like, well, just, you know, some local stuff or whatever. Because at the time I was in Vancouver and you were...
elsewhere.
Yeah, you were elsewhere. And you're like, you're in WCW, right? Yeah. And you're like, so no one's been calling you. And then I was like, what would you be asking? Like, it was just
weird. First one he called, because I orchestrated this, because he had gotten Benoit with Tiger Chung Lee. Because Tiger's.
Didn't he call Bret Hart?
He did Bret Hart too, yeah, as Tiger as well. But he the first time he called you as Sato, I had him say, if you're interested, Randy, call me at 352-25. And you actually said, Sato called me, but his number didn't work. And I said, well, that's crazy. Maybe he'll call you back. Call him back. And that's when you went into Lenny no-sell mode.
Uh-huh. Because Sato had called me before.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know, so that's why I was like, oh. And it sounded just like him.
But let's talk about this. So this was just the rib. But so if you're talking about American companies at the time, ECW, WCW, and WWE.
I wrestled all of them.
So tell us about each one. ECW, what happened?
So ECW, I went there.
This is the original with Paul Heyman, yep. ECW Arena, that time.
Yep. So I went to have like my tryout or whatever you want to call it. I had a couple matches there. Flew out and I thought they went really good. He said they went really
good. Who did you wrestle with?
I wrestled.
He's not going to tell you the truth.
Well, I wrestled Mike Awesome,
right,
one match, which we've wrestled a million times before, so yeah. I know that match went good. And then I wrestled. He was
George Dumbleby.
No,
Dave.
I'm just drawing a blank on the name right now.
All right, so wrestled somebody else.
It was from the Fantastics.
Tommy Rogers.
Tommy Rogers.
Well, he was a pretty good worker.
I almost was thinking Tommy Dreamer, but it wasn't Tommy Dreamer.
Roger Daltrey, I think his name was.
I wrestled Roger Daltrey, yeah.
So you wrestled Tom, but how'd that go? Because he was a great
worker. It was good. I thought it went good. It was just, you know, the classic when you go into an arena and no one knows who you are.
Right.
But, you know, I got heat or whatever, or tried to get as best
as I could.
You
there as Luther?
Yep.
With the gimmick?
With my whole, like, devil weird.
So what happened with that then?
So I wrestled, do the matches. They said they were really good. He, you know, pays me a little bit, and he's like, yeah, I just, you know, right now we're having, he was pretty upfront. He's like, we're having like money issues right now. We can't really, I can't bring you in.
I think honestly, not to be a dick, but there was something along there. Did you use points to get there or frequent flyers?
Yeah,
or something?
I flew my.
Yeah. Cause I got you the addition and you flew yourself there.
Yeah.
So he couldn't afford to fly you from the West Coast.
Bring me in, right? And then he's like, and I was like, well, I can move and stuff, like, because I have no problems with that stuff. And he was just like, we just can't afford, like, I couldn't pay very well or whatever. Because, like, a couple of the guys were, like, Mike was there and stuff, but he was working for, like, nothing, you know. And I couldn't work for nothing.
Of course.
You know, I needed to make some money, you know.
So that was ECW.
I think I probably would have got a job there.
If you lived like, freaking, you know. Philly,
yeah,
you would have been there.
I think so, yeah, for sure.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
So then what happened with WCW?
So then WCW, I go, I think it went so. I mean,
So tell the story. Is that in Kelowna or something?
I wrestled. Yeah, it was Kelowna. Well, I did a couple shows, but then I was like, you know how they have you sometimes as like security guys or whatever, like back, you know, backstage talent or whatever. So it was cool. I mean, you still can make a payday. But then I'm wrestling in Kelowna against Vampiro. And so I talked to him the day before, and he was not super cool.
He's not cool.
He was pretty drugged out, in my opinion. I'm not a drug counselor, but obviously.
Well, maybe you should be.
I should be, but I don't know. I even was super nice. I was like, hey, we've wrestled in the same, because he wrestled in WR. Hey, we've worked for the same companies in Japan and just wanted to say hi because we're working tomorrow or whatever. And I always feel like I get along with people in the dressing room. Like, I've talked to
you. You're a get-along guy.
And he's just being a dick.
Like,
and
what's he saying?
Like, he didn't like you. And so
he hates me.
I noticed a couple people that had heat with you then had heat with me right off the bat. And I was like, whatever, dude. So we go over the match, and then
is this a tryout match? Is it a dark match? Is it on TV?
It's on TV. It was the very last worldwide.
Okay, right on.
Yeah. So we go out and we have all this stuff, but then he's like kind of no selling my shit, and I'm selling all his stuff, and then time for me to do stuff, and he's like, "No, we got to take it home." And I was like,
"I wish you would have choked him out like he did later."
You're an idiot. But then that day before, he comes up to me actually before the matches, and he's like, "Hey, I just want to apologize. Like, I didn't know who you were yesterday, and then people were telling me, and like, yeah, you were like big in Japan, and then like, just." You know, sorry for how I acted. I was like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, you're a dick. I don't really care about So that's how that went. But then they said, oh, yeah, you did really good. And we are looking to maybe offer you a contract or whatever. And I was like, holy shoot, that's really cool. And then it turns out they're like.
This is Terry Taylor, right?
And another guy that I couldn't tell you.
Right. So Terry Taylor has the contract.
And he kind of also kind of knew me from before because when in WWF when I went, he had been there when I first got my offer to come and try out there at that time too.
I forgot about WWF. I was here before.
Yeah, so that went before. So I think that was a carryover or whatever too. And so then they're talking about the deal, which sounded really awesome.
What was the deal?
It was like 3 years and
for what?
I want to say like 130 and then like. 210 and then 3 cents. Like
that's insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was awesome money. But WCW is throwing money around big time. And I was just like, holy like that's game changer, right? Mm-hmm. Even to this day, standards. Sure. That's like crazy good. And so I was like, awesome. So then they're talking about like, oh, your work permit. I was like, oh, I was still living in Canada at the time. And I was like, oh, I don't have a work permit. And they're like, what? And I was like, at the time, my girlfriend was from America, who, you know, and I was like, well, my girlfriend's American. And they're like, oh, you're not married. Like, you should marry her. I was like, I don't want to do that just to get there. And that even that takes time. Like, they just don't give it to you. Right? So then I was like, well, I don't have a thing. And so they start to pull this paper back that was on the ground.
Papers on the table.
Yeah.
And he's pulling it back.
Well, everything is pulled back. And then this other guy, like, he's the one that has a briefcase. I don't even know. I don't remember who he was. He must have been like the actual
lawyer or something.
Yeah. And then I was like, and then he said, well, we'll tell you something we're not really supposed to, we're not telling people, but we're not signing people we have to get permits for because we're actually going out of business, like we're selling.
Right.
You know, so I knew they were selling to WWE before because he just basically told me that. So if I would have had my American visa at the time, then I would have got signed. But I didn't yet. I didn't get a work permit until like a couple of years later.
So tell us about the WWE one, because let me tell you a little story about that. When I first signed with WWE, which was August of 99, and I think back on it now, like, what the fuck? I was like, hey, Vince, I got this other guy. And like, I've been there for like 2 months. I remember talking to him at the Target Center in Minneapolis, which was like a month after I signed. Saying, I got this other guy and you should take a look at him. And I remember saying, was he a good person? I'm like, he's a great guy. He's like, that's all we care about here is good people. I'm thinking back now, I was like, whatever. But you and I made a highlight tape.
I made one and then you remade it.
But this is old school VHS.
Yeah.
And I remember it was to The Call of Cthulhu from Metallica. And it was a really cool video. And I remember I took it to an editing place. Like, I'm not an editor at all. And we put this together. And listen, obviously, we're best buds. But what the fuck was I thinking? I'm not even over. I'm a nobody. And all I'm caring about is trying to get my friend in. And they hated me at this point in time. You had no chance of getting in because I was so hated. But I was just thinking, well, you bring in guys that deserve to get a chance. So I made this video and I gave it to whoever, Bruce Pritchard, whatever. And then they flew you in for a tryout?
Well, so what happened was, though, I had sent a video in myself, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I made one. But I made mine more – so you made that one, like, Japan style,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I made one that was more almost like a snuff porn film. So it was like –
Did it get signed?
Well, so – like it has me tied up, hanging with like electrical tape all over everything, and then I have like girls in like leather, like running
around. What girls do you know that wore leather?
Well, I had a couple like
friends,
and then I had like Lonnie was in it, and so this girl's like walking around whipping, and like Lonnie's in like a wife beater with a tennis ball in his mouth, taped in his mouth, tied to a chair, like just dumb stuff for like him dancing. It was really weird. So anyways, when I ended up going to Titan Towers, when I got flown in, I was there.
They flew into Titan Towers?
Yeah. So I was there for like a week, the first trip.
Well, I know nothing about this. Tell me the story.
Okay, well, so I'll get into that. But when I'm there, we go upstairs, you go upstairs to the cafeteria, right? Mm-hmm. So I go up to the cafeteria and I don't know anybody there, like at all. So I'm upstairs and I'm waiting in line, and this guy comes up to me and he's like, "Hey, are you Dr. Luther?" And I was like, kind of, you know, a little marked out. I was like, "Yeah." And it was Kevin Kelly. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I thought so. I just wanted to say, like, we got your promo tape in here a while ago. And I don't know this guy, so I know it's not a rip because no one knows who right. I am or whatever. And he goes, "I got to say, like, that was, like, the best promo tape we've ever got." And he goes, "I've had nightmares about that for, like, a couple months." Because it was so different.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh, that's awesome." Because in between clips of like this snuff porno stuff, I'd put action shot or action videos of me doing stuff in the ring.
Right.
And it was like completely different. So I got flown out there, stayed for a week, had a bunch of matches.
Like at the training center there? Mm-hmm. Who was down there? Like who's the teachers?
Pritchard was gotcha. There. Yeah. So I think there's like 8 guys or something like that. And I would say 4 of them were
good. Yeah.
And then 4 were, I don't know why they were there.
I remember this now, yeah.
They were terrible. And
you had to work with those guys.
And yeah. And so, yeah, it was bad. Like basically when they were in there, like a couple of them, we had to like do matches. And like I remember 2 matches. The guys were in there and were so bad, Pritchard would stop them, and Pritchard had to call their stuff for them as they were doing it, like himself. And I was right. like, "Why are you here if you have to have that done?" So he liked my matches. I got good reviews because he would watch videotape and then review everything. So I got good reviews on mine, but I have like just working totally broomsticks, you know, they were not good. And then we had to do promo stuff. I remember I cut up for one of my promos was on you because they told me like pick someone there, so I picked you. And my promos I thought were pretty good because they don't give you really time to like write anything out. Like it's sort of just like there. And then it's like, hey, do a 30-second, do a 1 minute. Those are easy. But then like one of them is like, do a 5 minute. And I was like, who does a 5 minute promo? You know what I mean? Like. Yeah. But I got through it. It was cool. That was the one I was talking about you, and I just went into talking about like doing tour, like it turns into almost storytelling sure, at that point. So, and the other guys, their promos were Vince, I'll wash your car, or like I'll mow your lives. Like, so your whole promo is you're begging.
Right.
You know, so it's like, huh. So he's like, oh, all these promos are the shits and blah, blah, blah. And then he comes back the next day, and this is one thing that I still remember I'm kind of proud of. He goes, I rewatched everyone's promos. I got to change my mind. Like this Lenny's promos were really, really good. Like they were so bad all day. I just lumped them all in together until I watched them. And he's like, you stayed in character the whole time. And they were awesome. So I was like, oh, that's cool.
So what did that lead
to? Nothing. So
why?
But it kind of my name was kicked around a couple times. Well, I had some dark matches.
Yeah, dark
in Vancouver, I know that. Just Joe.
Which was a bomb. He sandbagged.
I never want to say someone.
I'll say it. He sandbagged you.
Yeah, it wasn't good. He actually, when they were in the back, like, started to give us trouble, he did take the blame. He said it was him.
But I never told you this, but from what I recall, Bruce Pritchard said, like, we love him. We're going to sign him. We just want to watch him in his match. And when it was done, it was never spoke of again.
Yeah.
From what I recall, like that match did not go good and they just can forget it, blaming you because he was under contract as like.
I was there for every spot, dude. Like I didn't.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't you.
Yeah.
It was him.
And actually, Joe is cool because Joe actually said I screwed up or whatever. Like it was it was me.
So it was after that match, were you ever called again?
No, but I heard that I was still on their radar because I was told from a couple people a few different things. I was told that I was going to be – they were thinking of putting me in a tag team with a guy named Gangrel. You know Gangrel? Because they said we both kind of looked alike, which I actually to this day still get people –
they thought you were Gangrel, when you first showed up. Yeah. It was Gangrel and Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Well, and, giant Billy Corgan.
So there was talk about me and him doing the Brood thing, and then I lost that job out to two of our friends instead.
Oh yeah, right. Those two young upstarts. But there was the guy from Minnesota,
and then the second thing that I was kind of kicked around about was Don's group.
The Oddballs.
Yeah, but
they
then
call the Oddballs
Oddities. Should have been the Oddballs. That would have been better. But then they put like more guys that were already in their group that weren't getting over into there. And so I kind of lost out on that. And then I was told when I did the WRP thing that they were wanting to put me in some guy they were wanting to work with from Minnesota, but wanted to try him out. And I was told that my name is really high up on their stuff. So I'm always was on their radar. And then this guy, I guess, shit the bed so bad after a couple times, they just scrapped the whole thing. And then that was it.
And then we talked about this. You're going to do something with Impact, with your
Impact. But then I tore my tricep.
So you became kind of like the lonesome loser, like Pigpen with the rain falling. But that's all gone now.
Yeah.
And that's like the best story of redemption. Like I love that story. You know,
it's the kind of almost like, I don't know, like Rocky story or what. I don't even know what you'd say. Like,
but here's the thing too: is that now that you're in AEW. Everyone looks up to you because they realize right away this guy's.
I don't think that.
Well, MJF won't leave you alone. He's like,
oh, he's awesome.
Lenny said he's going to do the Claudia. I'm like, Lenny's got a 5-minute squash. He's going to beat the shit out of the guy. He's probably not going to do any comedy. But if he's here for another month, he will do the claw for you. Whatever.
I will. Because I do like doing comedy, and you always tell me don't do comedy.
Well, not now. No. But my point is, it's like, you know, don't put a pile on your head and act like a witch at this point.
But.
When the time is right, you can. So my point is, though, now that you have this 33-year career, and now you're here in AEW, and maybe 2 months ago or 3 months ago, maybe they didn't know you, but now guys like Dustin Rhodes, one of the most experienced guys, is one of your biggest fans.
Awesome,
and,
dude.
You know, Tony Khan knew nothing about you, and Cody Rhodes, who appreciate your attitude, and QT and MJF, and all these guys watching your matches going, this guy's really good, and it's like, we know. That's redemption for you. That must feel pretty cool.
My thing, like I said the other day, is like I felt like everything's been, you know, pretty good. I just, you know, a little rusty because especially after, you know, taking a little time off here because of everything. I was like, if it's pretty good now, rusty, I was like, just wait until I get back in my like groove. You're going to see for real. I mean, dude, I did a top rope helo to the outside. Like,
it was great.
At my age and size, it's pretty good.
It's your advanced experience.
Yeah. And I was pretty proud that I did that. Like, no problem.
All the stuff you've been doing. You invented a new move tonight I've never seen before, which is great. Last story, because they're all waiting for us downstairs to go drink the White Claws. That's another thing, too. Our company is so much camaraderie. Like, people hang out. They want
I said before, love it. Everybody's so great.
Last story. Not quickly, but tell it succinctly. Roppongi. I'm going to pull a Martin Short as David Susskind or David Steinberg. Roppongi, Dr. Luther, Chris Jericho, Christopher Lloyd.
Oh,
go.
Okay, so we're in Roppongi.
It's a big party area in Tokyo.
Big party area. So Christopher Lloyd comes in there.
This is Doc Emmett Brown.
Marty. But see, everybody's version of this is different. Because I don't know if you know this, but like I could throw some drinks down back in the day.
Best line is like, we're going from one bar to the other. Can you finish drinking? You had a giant drink. You went, let's go. Maybe you slammed it
but
down.
But I do that all the time. Like, no problem. Yeah. And then I'd get super loaded ski.
And then puke into a what is it called? Pringles can.
That was on the way back to the airport. That was when they were like, we shall not work together again.
So go back to Roppongi. We go to Roppongi.
Didn't I also throw up in front of some Brazilian models?
It was the same night. I've got pictures of it.
You were passed out in front of the bar, and I was making fun of you in front of him, and all of a sudden I was just like, oh.
He's puking.
Hold on.
So let's go back to the Christmas.
Oh, my God. We were terrible.
Oh. You, me, Christopher Lloyd, Roppongi, do tell.
So we're in the bar, and Christopher Lloyd comes in. I remember
he's over in the side. We're like, holy shit, is that Christopher Lloyd?
Yeah. And I remember, too, he was trying to, like, wanting to pick up girls or something.
Of course
he was. And I was like, oh, we picked. And then,
so are we.
Yeah, so are we. And so, but then I wanted to get. I was like, we got to get a present for long. Like, my brother's an actor, right? So I thought it was his birthday coming up. I wanted to get him a present. And so I was so drunk, I thought, if I could get Christopher Lloyd's driver's license.
You pickpocketed Christopher Lloyd.
I didn't, though.
You did. Pickpocketed him to try
and get
his license.
I got a piece of paper.
You still pulled the piece of paper, which was a laundry receipt from the hotel, out of his pocket. That's pickpocketing. Pickpocketing doesn't tell you what
you
picked.
I wasn't very good at it.
Out of the pocket. You picked something out of his pocket. Went, look what I got. And it was like, it's a fucking laundry receipt.
I've never done anything like that before, so I wasn't very good. But, like, what goes through my mind thinking, I got to get this guy's driver's license?
I know. So you go pickpocket, you come back with a laundry receipt.
I go back, and then we end up talking, and the dude, like, likes me. Like, totally, like, I don't know, talks a lot. And then we're talking, and then you came over.
I came over.
But you wanted him to do imitations.
Well, because I'm an idiot. I see Titan and I stand
there. Dude, Titan was burning his jacket behind him with a cigarette, and I was like,
Titan was burning his jacket. Well, so what's worse, burning someone's jacket or pickpocketing them?
I think burning his jacket.
So, but I go over like, okay, well, if Lenny's talking to him, like, he's really going to love me because Lenny's
an idiot.
And I go over them like, hey, Marty, could you take it to 88.8 gigawatts? And I'm thinking, and then I look back now, how many assholes go up to Christopher Lloyd and imitate Dr. Brown?
A bunch of people in the bar were doing
it. And he goes, oh, by the way, that's a terrible imitation. And it's 1.21 gigawatts. And he turns his back. And I'm like, and meanwhile, you're just right in there. It's like the hottest chick in the bar, except for Christopher Lloyd, and all he wants to do is talk to you.
And he actually did a Jimmy Gutowski imitation for me when he ended up doing that.
Sorry, booby.
And then we went out because I was like, "Hey, can you call my brother?" So he was like, "Okay."
And this is no cell phones. This is telephone cards, the payphone. You guys have to go inside it.
So we went.
That's why he loved you.
We walked 3 blocks. I could not find an international phone. So I find a domestic phone because they have different ones there. And so I pick up the domestic phone. I was like, can you please pass me through to international calling? And they're like, we don't do that. I was like, this is an emergency.
I got Christopher Lloyd here.
I actually kept saying, like, it's an emergency. You need to call this number international. And they eventually patched me through. And it was like a big thing.
They patched me through. Like, Christopher Lloyd. Oh, to myself, Christopher Lloyd.
And then so they call. And then stupid Lonnie doesn't answer his phone. So it just goes to answer machine. So anyways, but Christopher Lloyd gives me his number, right? So he writes his number down. And I'm thinking, oh, this has got to be a bullshit number or whatever. And we're leaving to come back.
Okay, so hold on. You come back. And I'm like, where's Christopher Lloyd? Because you just split from the bar. And I think that was the night with the Brazilian models or maybe whatever. There was girls there. And I was like, I don't care about the girls. Where's Lenny? And you come back. And you're like, yeah, you know, we tried to call Lonnie and – probably had some dip. He's gone. And I'm like, and you're such an asshole, too. You're like, oh, well, you know that you got the upper hand. He gave me his number, and there's a piece of paper, and you literally, it's like a little kid. Hello, Chris Jericho. Hello, Dr. Luther. Like, you instead of writing just like Chris, you wrote down Christopher Lloyd, and you wrote down a phone number. Next day, we go to the airport, Narita. After you, I'm amalgamating stories. You almost puked in a Pringles can, whatever it was.
I was not good.
So we
dude.
Get to the airport, and you show me his number. I'm like, call him, dude. See if it's real.
We did. We went to a call. But so we called, but we're like, I don't know why we were scared.
You called. You were scared.
Yeah, I was scared shitless. Yeah. So I did a really cheesy German accent. Which I've never even been to Germany. I don't even know how to do
You're
a German accent.
You're going to Germany. So what's the accent?
Oh, I can't even repeat it. I don't even know. So
hello, it's Christopher Lloyd there.
Something like that. And then, but the whoever answered it was his maid or something. And she's like, oh, no, he's in Japan filming. So I was like, This is his actual home number. He gave me his home phone number. Just some random, some dude who's going to help him pick up girls in a bar in Japan.
This is like, and this we got to end this off. But this is like when you met Rob Halford on the street, who also gave you his number for a different reason. Because I remember us sitting at the phone, and you're like, "Oh my god, what happened? He's not home. His maid says he's in Japan." And we're like, "Yes, he gave me his number."
Yeah, I gave that to Lonnie for his birthday, and he never called him. And the rest is history.
And on that note, we shan't work together again except for here in AEW.
And then we'll do another one of these.
There's 20 more.